Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
So here's the deal. I know this makes some people comfortable when we go back and change things. There was that outcry when we changed the name of Lake Calhoun.
Mm-hmm. But Dean Acosta.
When most people, not all, but most people understood that Calhoun was
a raging racist who was an advocate for slavery.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Making sure.
Then people say, all right, yeah, maybe it's appropriate that we do change the name. My wife is
because he belongs in a museum. Not on a lake. That's right. Where that guy belongs.
Shouldn't celebrate the name Calhoun. Yeah. My wife is half Italian. I asked her, what does she feel if we don't? How does she feel about not calling this Columbus Day and calling it Indigenous Peoples Day? And Lori kind of came around the more she got to learn about Christopher Columbus and what really happened here and how many people died.
You know, the raping and the pillaging and the genocide, things like that. Is that what you're talking about? Hmm, interesting.
So with us to talk about this is Ken Davis, who we have on frequently because he's amazing. He's
the smartest guy in the room.
Author of Don't Know Much About History. Actually, he does know a lot about history and can maybe help us connect the dots and provide some perspective.
Hey, Ken.
Hey, Ken.
Hi, good afternoon. It doesn't say I don't know much about history.
It says we don't. Wait, Ken, clear up something for us.
Yes.
You know, Paul just mentioned he asked his half-Italian wife. She was upset about this because we think of Columbus as Italian. Is he Italian or is I read something this morning that he might be Spanish and we're confused.
Well, he's Genoese. And that's, you know, it's an interesting distinction because Italy, as we know it today, did not exist.
The nation states, right?
Genoa was one of many principalities. And then there were the papal states and other countries owned sections of what we now think of. Italy as a nation was not united until around 1860. And so he certainly was Italian in the sense that he was born in Genoa, which is now part of Italy. And Italian Americans do have this special affection for Columbus. They see this as their holiday, that it celebrates the Italian contribution to America. And certainly Italian immigrants played a very special place in our history. But no other group gets a holiday as a nation. This holiday was for Columbus. It was designed hundreds of years ago. It's a very old celebration to really create that kind of patriotic and somewhat Christian idea that Columbus brought Christian European civilization to this vast savage wilderness, which of course it is vast, but it wasn't savage and it wasn't all wilderness.
And he brought along with syphilis and smallpox and all kinds of other goodies that he brought to the New World. No denying that Christopher Columbus was courageous sailing off into the great unknown. I don't think anybody is arguing that. But can you just give us sort of a top 10 list, some of the things that Christopher Columbus did that do not stand the test of time?
Okay, first of all, let's get the fundamentals here. 1492, Columbus sails. He was not Spanish. He was from Genoa. He was being sponsored by the Spanish king and queen, Ferdinand and Isabella. 1492 was also a special year for them because they had thrown the Moors out of Spain that year. The Moors were Arabic, Islamic people from North Africa, and they had been in Spain for hundreds of years, and they were finally forced out. It was also the year that Jews were thrown out of Spain.
So a big year for
not
them.
Wow. Not a great year for in many other respects when we think about 1492. Columbus simply was trying to sail west to get to the east. In other words, to get to China, mm-hmm. Japan, the Spice Islands of the East Indies. This had been something that Europe was dazzled by for a long time. And the Portuguese had started to sail, the rivals to the Spanish had started to sail down the coast of Africa all the way down and up and around. And that was a long, arduous journey, and the Portuguese weren't telling anybody how they did it. Columbus said, wait a minute, I think we can just go straight around the world, sailing west to get east. He was right that the world was round. Nobody thought the world was flat, and it was flat. That's a misconception.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but Columbus misjudged how big the world was, and of course he had no idea that there was a big roadblock in the way called North and South America, although that's not what they were called then. So Columbus does this, and it does open this extraordinary period of the voyage, discovery, exploration, exchange between the old world and the new world. On the other hand, it also introduces an era of exploitation, colonization, death and devastation that is remarkable in its in the breadth of what it does. Columbus found people living on these islands. Of course, he never reached what became the United States of America, sailed around the Caribbean for four different voyages, and named the people that he found Los Indios, the Indians, because he still thought he was in the East Indies islands of Asia.
Well, close.
Is it true that Columbus, is responsible for all the horrific things, you know, the smallpox blankets and this mass genocide? But because I was listening to a Dennis Prager video this morning, and in this video, it said that there were cannibals living here and that the natives were completely warring with each other, and they were, some of them sided with Columbus to kill other tribes. Now, again, I'm not sure what's fake news and what's not, but I trust you, Ken, as a historian. So could you, because, you know, these are very convincing videos on the internet, so I'm curious to know your thought on that.
Well, let's start from scratch. We're talking about when Columbus arrives, the people he meets are basically people on different islands, and there are different groups, different tribal groups, different nations, the Carib, the Arawak, the Taino. Some were cannibalistic. Were they all fighting with each other? Not much, and certainly not on a genocidal scale. They also weren't enslaving each other the way Columbus quickly set about to enslave the people he found. He said, these people, they're docile, they have no weapons, I can leave a few men here and we can run the whole place, and they will make very good servants. Those are the words he uses in writing back to the king and queen. He brings 20 people back after the first voyage. Most of them die on the way because they do not have any native immunity to European diseases. Smallpox, you mentioned. There were measles. You go down the whole list. These were introduced by Columbus and the successive generations of Spanish and other Europeans who came to the New World. And that would be a story repeated over and over. The native people would often welcome these Europeans, wonder how they could manage to survive. They didn't seem to have very good skills at managing in the wilds or learning how to plant crops. So they often were helped by these people, who they then soon put in chains. Columbus wanted people to dig for gold. If they didn't produce a sufficient amount of gold, he would cut off a hand. And this is not a historian describing this hundreds of years later. This is what a priest named De las Casas wrote in the early 1500s when he went to this world to preach to these people and was appalled by the treatment that he saw, that people were being set upon by war dogs, that they were being crucified. So this was a dreadful period in American history and certainly world history.
And Ken, you write that this is really part of a much bigger conversation, whether it's reparations for African Americans who were enslaved, whose ancestors were enslaved, or whether it's talking about Confederate monuments. Connect those dots. Why is this important? And do you, as an author, As a thinker, do you think it is appropriate to change the name?
Yeah, I do. And I'll start there. It's a simple one. And as I write on my website, I think it's well past time that we ditched Columbus Day. And whether you want to call it Indigenous Peoples Day or Discoverer's Day or cancel this holiday and make Election Day a holiday, which is, on the table. Some people have suggested we need a national holiday for Election Day. I'm all in favor of that. Why not just swap them out? And, you know, you want to call this Italian American Heritage Day? Fine, that would be, but don't make it a national holiday anymore, and let's make Election Day the holiday so we don't have to add another new holiday. So that's my basic feeling.
Okay.
But
fair
connecting
enough
to the question of how we look at history, yeah, I think we are at a time when we don't know much about history. I mean, a lot of these facts are gone for generations because we don't teach history very well, and that's sad and dangerous. But we are having this reassessment. Confederate monuments, we're looking at that. We are looking at this idea of 1619, the year that the first Africans are brought to Jamestown, Virginia, 400 years ago, beginning the history of slavery and racial slavery in America. That's an important moment in our history, too. So I think the kind of convenient, safe bedtime story history we all kind of got growing up, certainly 50 years ago if you were in school, has been replaced by a more accurate and more significant history that addresses what the past has to do with the present. And I think that's the most important job of the historian.
It said history is written by the victors, but you're arguing that in large respects, our history has been whitewashed.
Completely. We had a sanitized history that lasted for a long time, and George Washington was part of that. Most kids learn the cherry tree story, and not much more. And the fact that he was one of the most significant slaveholders in the country at the time was kind of glossed over. We are reexamining that. I looked at that in a recent book called In the Shadow of Liberty. And this is not to tear down George Washington or say he was a terrible person, but it is to balance the scales. That's the job of the historian, to present facts. And facts, as John Adams said, are stubborn things.
And what do you say to people who might push back at you and say, well, those were just the times. It was a different time, Ken.
A very, very basic argument I hear all the time. Unfortunately, though, and realistically, Columbus was criticized in his own time, as I just mentioned, by this priest, De Las Casas. So it wasn't acceptable in that time. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison all knew that slavery was a contradiction to what they believed in and were fighting for, and they wanted to see an end of slavery. Unfortunately, they did precious little to actually make that happen. So it wasn't this question of, oh, they were men of their days. They've certainly built their fortunes, their wealth, and their political power on slavery, and that's an important part of the story we have to understand. But it wasn't like they thought it was okay because it was the 18th or 19th century.
And Christopher Columbus, he was bringing Christianity to the New World. In Christianity, it's not okay to cut off someone's hand if they don't have enough gold.
No, I don't recall seeing that in the Bible anywhere. No, I do not.
Well, this is, and again, whitewashing is certainly part of that. And when you had school books of a certain generation, you saw Christopher Columbus coming ashore, and what was he carrying? He was carrying that big flag that had a cross on it. It was really more about evangelizing the New World, and that's why the Pope was so happy about this, and he gave great credit to Ferdinand and Isabella because they saw this as a part of the idea of Christianizing this whole part of the world, and the Pope was always happy to get some new warm bodies. Unfortunately, the track record of the Church over centuries in the United States, the future United States, and the rest of the Americas, was often pretty bleak. That the plantation mentality, and later the methods that were used, particularly in California, were really only one step removed from outright slave labor. And that slave labor killed many people, along with the dreadful diseases that were introduced by Europeans. Smallpox wiped out tens of millions of people across the continent after the Europeans arrived. That's the grim side of history that we often don't talk about.
Okay. Ken Davis, thank you for providing perspective and making
read all
us
Ken's
think.
Books. And don't know much about history. Yeah, read all of Ken's books.
And I have to congratulate WCCO for winning the Marconi Award, but I have to also tell you, since we're talking about Italians, Marconi happened to be a fascist who was aligned with Mussolini.
Giving it back. That's it.
Mussolini was Marconi's best man at his wedding. So, you know, we're tearing down statues here. I don't know if the Italians are going to take Marconi Airport
away. So you're saying Giordana should give back her Marconi? Is that what you're saying?
I'm going to rename it. I'll Sharpie it out and I'll put something else on there. That's terrible, Ken. But Ken, I'm glad you told me. I'm glad I know.
It's important to know this stuff. Marconi was the most famous Italian of his day, and he aligned himself with Mussolini, and he later kept Jewish scientists from being accepted into the Italian Academy.
I told you.
Great.
Good grief. Ken Davis. Wow.
All that bad
Did I
news?
Just spoil your
yeah.
day?
Yeah. We're going to go home now.
Okay.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks for having me, guys. And enjoy the day, whatever you want to call it.
You too. Thank you, sir.
This is why we have to read his books. So great. Now I'm giving it back because the dude was an anti-Semite, too. What a terrible guy.
Just rename it Macaroni.
There you go.
It's the Mac. You got the Macaroni Award, and I'm very proud of you. Very proud of CCO Radio.
Jeez.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.